face, left, right, left, pounding him as hard as I could. He was bleeding bad, but I kept at him. That's when Naomi started screaming. She tried to make me stop. I don't know, I can't remember very well, but I think she pulled on my arm or something, and I shoved her out of the way and kept swinging at Pa. Pretty soon he went down like a sack of seed, and I started kicking him, yelling as loud as I could. I swear, Hiram, I felt like all the hate I'd ever had was pouring out of me right onto him. When he stopped moving, stopped swearing, stopped crying, I quit. And that's when I could hear Naomi crying and begging me to leave him alone. She wasn't mad or nothing, but awful scared, maybe scared I'd gone crazy too. I tried talking to her, but she was just crying and crying, so I grabbed my duffel bag and got out of there, out for good. I ain't never going back, never.
You just left Naomi there? What's she going to do?
Last I saw her, she was bent over Pa, trying to clean him up. I told her to leave him be. He had it coming, and she knew it. And you know what? It felt good to rip into my old man. The whole time I was pounding him, I wanted to kill him. I was honestly trying to beat him to death. He took a deep, shaky pull on his cigarette. I don't know if I managed it or not, but in case I did, I come down here to let the sheriff know.
You told the sheriff you beat up your own dad?
Sheriff Smith knows all about Pa. He's known what's been going on since I was a little kid. Soon as I told him, he said he was surprised it hadn't happened sooner, and told me to get on the late bus to Jackson and never come back. Told me he'd take care of Pa and make sure Naomi's okay. You know, for a lawman, Sheriff Smith's all right.
R.C. looked like he'd been through the fight of his life, lost, and was relieved it was finally over. He smiled weakly.
I'm going to make it, Jackson Hiram. Things are going to be different for me.
Are you sure the sheriff's not doing anything? How do you know he won't come after you?
If he does, he does.
R.C. shrugged.
I've been in trouble with the law before, and I can take it, but like I said, he knows Pa and what's been going on at home. He said even if I did kill Pa, he'd consider it self-defense or justifiable homicide or something like that.
What about all this other stuff? I asked.
They just had that big trial in Sumner. Bryant and Milam got turned loose.
He told me about all that, and asked me about that nigger trouble that happened last month. Said somebody told him I'd been bragging about how I was going to help humble an uppity northern nigger.
He looked at me with a thin smile.
I wonder who would have done that.
I gulped and took a step back, half expecting R.C. to flatten me. But he just kept talking.
Anyway, I told him that Bryant and Milam did ask me to help him that night. But when I went home after talking to you, Pa was drunk again, yelling, hitting, same old stuff. That's when I decided I had to get out of here, so I grabbed some things, left home, caught the bus to Jackson, and haven't been back since.
But I thought...
Yeah, you thought I helped kill that Chicago boy. Well, Mr. Sis Baby, I guess I missed my chance.
He shrugged his shoulders.
I don't know. I could have done it, but I didn't. Like I said, things are going to be different for me now. I'm looking for a change in Jackson.
What about Naomi?
Where is she? What's she going to do? Naomi's no baby. Living with somebody like Pa makes you pretty tough, Hiram Hilburn, so I ain't worried about my kid sister. If Pa's dead, maybe she'll stay in the house a while, or maybe she'll move in with some do-good neighbor. She can come down to Jackson with me if she wants, but I ain't telling her what to do or not to do. She's old enough to figure things out, and I got my own worries.
Do you know where she is right now?
I want to see her, help her if I can. R.C. took a last long drag on his cigarette, flicked it out into the parking lot, and picked up the duffel bag near his feet.
You didn't hear me, sis baby. Only thing Pa ever done for her was make her tough, so she don't need your help or nobody else's. She wants to see you, she'll find you. You could go looking for her, and maybe you'd find her. She's probably at home or at the hospital if Pa made it. But I doubt she's going to be wanting to see anybody right now, even you.
He touched his nose gingerly. then looked up at the sky for a moment before walking past me.
I gotta get to the bus depot. See you round, sis baby.
When R.C. left, I walked to the bridge and stood where Naomi and I usually met. I hoped maybe she'd show up later after she got her dad taken care of. Leaning against the bridge rail, I thought about R.C. Rydell. Was he lying about being in Jackson? Lying about Naomi? R.C. was mean, but I'd never known him to hurt his sister. But if he was telling the truth, who'd been with Bryant and Milam that night they kidnapped Emmett Till? Probably somebody as hateful to Negroes as R.C., but I didn't want to think about it. Like Grandpa said, the trial was over and nobody down here was going to be looking to start another one. Besides, I wanted to think about Naomi. I'd always known she'd had it bad living with her dad, but until tonight I really had no idea how rotten things were for her. I didn't know what I could do, but I wanted to be there at the bridge if she decided she needed my help, or if she just wanted somebody to talk to. Maybe the best thing for her would be to get out of Greenwood and come back to Arizona with me. She could stay with my family a while, at least until we could find somebody in Tempe for her to live with. My sisters would love her. So would Mom. She could go to Tempe High with me. It'd be hard for her at first. Kids would tease her about her southern accent and stuff, but like R.C. said, Naomi was tough. She could handle whatever Tempe High threw at her. I sat at the base of that bridge rail for a couple more hours, thinking about how great life would be with Naomi and Tempe, figuring out exactly how to convince her to come back with me, aching to see her again, to hold her, and let her know that I'd do whatever I could to make things right. I sat there a long time waiting and dreaming. But she never came. Finally, I walked home and went to bed. But I didn't sleep much. The next morning, even the smell of Ruth Ann's bacon and biscuits wasn't enough to get me out of bed. I felt flat, wiped out from the trial and everything, sad that my summer was over, and because I wasn't sure how he'd react, a little worried to go back home and face Dad. I'd be leaving Mississippi in a couple days, and when I got back to Tempe, I'd have to jump right into school and everything else that had started without me. Anyway, I wanted at least one lazy morning in bed before I went back to the grind at home. I should have been able to sleep in. I felt plenty lazy enough, but too many things were buzzing in my brain. Not the trial or Emmett Till or R.C. Rydell. That stuff was all done as far as I was concerned. I was worrying about Naomi. Was she all right? Would I see her before I left? If I did, would I be able to talk her into coming to Arizona? With all that running through my head, I tried to sleep and did doze a little, but I was too restless to sleep soundly. Like there was something I should have been doing but wasn't. I was thinking of Naomi, too, of course. It would have been impossible not to. Around 11 o'clock, I heard Grandpa talking to somebody down in the driveway below my window. Being lazy had made me bored and hungry, so I decided to get out of bed, get dressed, and see what Ruth Ann had left for me to eat. Before going downstairs, I looked out the window and saw Grandpa talking to three men I didn't recognize. Whatever they'd been doing, it looked like they had just about finished up. One man patted Grandpa on the shoulder and said, "You just let us worry about this, Mr. Hilburn. We know how to take care of these kinds of things. You can count on us doing it right." "I hope to get a fair price for it," said Grandpa. "It's been good to me all these years." The man held up a set of keys. "You can't be too choosy about price in this situation, but we'll do what we can. I guarantee you this truck will be out of Mississippi before dark. Soon as we get it sold, you'll get your money." "I could sell it myself and save a heck of a lot of money and trouble." Grandpa's voice was edgy, like it got when he was mad or tired. "Sure you could," the man said. "But having it sit around here for too long might end up making more trouble than you want. We'll keep it quiet and you'll get your money." The man got into the cab and started the truck while his two friends jumped in the back. Grandpa watched them drive away. When I came downstairs, he was at the kitchen table with a pile of papers spread out in front of him.
"So the dead rise again," he said with a smile. "Thought you'd never miss one of Ruth Ann's breakfasts."
I decided to sleep in at least once before I have to go back to school. I went to the stove and found a plate of biscuits and jelly Ruth Ann had left. I took the plate to the table and sat across from my grandfather. "Hey, Grandpa, what happened to the pickup?"
"I sold the damn thing. It was getting too rattly for me. I'm going to get a car with automatic transmission."
"A car? What are you going to do with a car? Can't haul stuff in it, can't take it out to the plantation, or fishing. There's not a thing wrong with that old pickup."
"Don't be bothering me about this, Hiram. It's gone and it's not coming back."
Grandpa looked a little mad, and I didn't want to be arguing with him during my last days in Greenwood, but selling that truck made no sense. I always liked that pickup. There's no good reason for getting rid of it.
"I've got reasons, and I don't have to be explaining them to my grandson."
His face got red again, and he started shoving his papers into a big brown envelope.
"Adults have reasons for doing what they do, even if they make no sense to children. Children, including you, Hiram, have got to learn to trust their elders. That truck's gone, and I don't want to hear any more about it."
"Seems like you don't want to hear any more about anything these days," I snapped back. "First about the trial, then about R.C. or whoever helped Bryant and Milam, and now about the truck."
Grandpa ignored me and concentrated on getting his papers into the envelope. There was no sense fighting with him about this. I was going home soon and wouldn't have been driving the truck much anyway. So I cooled off and changed the subject. "I saw R.C. Riddell last night, Grandpa."
He looked up right away.
"R.C. Riddell? Did he try to break your neck?"
"We just talked.
He was heading out of town after one too many fights with his dad."
"Too bad he's not taking his father with him," Grandpa said. "That man's been tormenting his children for longer than should be allowed. It ruined R.C., and I'm sure it was no good for Naomi, even though she seems to have turned out all right. At any rate, she'll be better off with her good-for-nothing brother gone. Where's he headed?"
"Jackson. He's been working down there for almost a month. And you know something kind of funny? He was down in Jackson the night Bryant and Milam kidnapped Emmett Till. When he first told me that, I thought for sure he was lying, but now I believe him. All this time I thought he was the third man they were looking for, and he wasn't even in the county."
"I wouldn't trust that boy any farther than I could throw him,"
Grandpa said.
His voice sounded hurried, nervous.
"You can't take anything he says for truth, though I never was convinced he had anything to do with all that trouble with Roy and J.W.
"Well, he's off the hook in case anybody ever starts trying to track down whoever else was in on that killing."
"I told you before, Hiram, no one in the Delta is going to bother with that case again. The jury gave a decision and the judge accepted it."
He got the last of his papers into the envelope and sealed it with the brass clasp.
"And now there's no evidence left to link any other person to the kidnapping. As they say, this case is closed."
Grandpa smiled, looking more relaxed than he had since before the trial started.
"And now it looks like we're going to have to start working on getting you on a train to Arizona."
"Yeah. Do you think you can call Mom and Dad today and let them know the trial's over and that I'm clear to leave now?"
"News about the trial was in papers all over the country, so I'm sure they know the trial's over. But I'll call and let them know you're coming home as soon as possible. I'd also better have Ruth Ann run over to the train depot and make sure we can get you a ticket for tomorrow, Monday."
It surprised me that Grandpa was so cheerful about my leaving.
Sure, I was anxious to get out of there as fast as I could, but I'd expected him to start with the usual sales pitch to stay in Greenwood. For most of my life, he'd been begging me to come back, and now it seemed like he couldn't wait for me to leave. But I didn't have time to figure him out right then. If I was going to be gone soon, I had to talk to Naomi. I told him I had to go find a friend.
Grandpa smiled.
"Of course. You have to say goodbye to the girlfriend. Don't be gone too long. You'll need to be getting your things packed up pretty soon."
Grandpa pushed away from the table and went into the living room. and I headed out the kitchen door for Naomi's house. When I was walking down the driveway, I spooked Ronnie Remington, who had just come out of his house and was walking his path to the sidewalk with his head down. He almost ran into me when we reached the sidewalk at the same time. "Excuse me," he said nervously as he stopped dead in front of me, waiting for me to move out of his way so he could follow his route on the sidewalk. He looked up and his eyes got wide when he recognized me.
I'm just going downtown to get some things."
I should have been looking where I was going. Ralph's always telling me to look where I'm going because if I don't, I'm going to run into things or get run over. He gulped and blinked rapidly. "Not that I'm worried about getting run over or that I'm saying you ever tried to run me over. I'm not saying that at all. No, not at all. You can trust me on that. I did not say that you were driving that old blue Ford pickup with that evil Rydell boy and tried to run me down. I did not say that, and you can rest assured that I will never say that to anyone, not a single solitary soul." His eyes glazed as he talked faster and faster. "One thing the Hilburns know is that the Remingtons are good neighbors. We never tell anyone anything. Ralph and I, we mind our own business, and we trust other people will mind theirs. Your grandpa, he knows that. We haven't told a soul about his pickup, not a soul." I had no idea what he was talking about, so I tried to slow him down. "There's nothing to tell about the pickup, Mr. Remington. Grandpa sold it. No secrets there."
"Nobody calls me Mr. Remington." He smiled. "It sounds good. Sounds like it should sound. I wonder if I should tell people to start addressing me as Mr. Remington. Ronnie always sounds so childish, and a man at my age, well, Ralph's actually older than I am, so I suppose he'd like to be called Mr. Remington, too. As a matter of fact, I'm sure he'd like that. We have similar tastes, you know. Well, not about everything, but about some things. A few things, at least. We used to, anyway."
He twitched when I touched his arm to stop him.
"Mr. Remington, about the truck, it's no secret," I said slowly. "Grandpa sold it, is all."
"Of course he sold it. He told us he was going to, after the trial and all and the horrible, horrible trouble that started up in money. Not that I've ever been to money, too small, just a cotton gin and a few stores, I hear. He made Ralph and me promise, as good neighbors, of course, that we wouldn't say anything to anyone about what Ralph saw. Well, when he saw it, he didn't think anything of it at the time. Folks often borrow your grandpa's truck, and Ralph, of course, can't sleep and often watches out the window. Not peeping, of course not that, but in a neighborly way, watching out for our neighbors and their things."
"Ralph saw something?"
Something tickled the pit of my stomach.
"Oh, no, I promised I would never say that. When your grandfather came over to talk to us about that terrible, terrible tragedy, that Chicago boy they found dead, when he came to talk to us about that, he wanted us to make sure we hadn't seen anything. Well, of course I hadn't, because I always retire by 10 o'clock. If I don't get a good 10 hours of sleep, I'm a wreck the next day. So, of course, I was asleep. But not Ralph. No, Ralph's a night owl. So he saw Roy and J.W. that Saturday night, recognized them right off because he'd gone to high school with J.W., of course. He's a few years older than J.W., but they were in school at the same time. So how could he not recognize them? Ralph remarked to me that he didn't know that your grandfather knew J.W., though. It was that next day he told me that. That about your grandfather and J.W. Milam."
Ronnie's words swirled around my head so fast I felt dizzy. I wasn't even sure what I was hearing.
"Milam? Grandpa was with Milam? I never said that, did I? Promised Ralph and I that we wouldn't tell anyone anything about it, and we haven't. We told your grandfather, but except for when he told me, Ralph would never ever tell anyone that he'd seen Roy and J.W. drop him off late, oh, very late that night. It was strange, though, for your grandfather to be out so late, and that's probably why Ralph even remembered it. You know he's so forgetful. He drinks, you know, too much if you ask me. But will he listen to me? No, never has, never will. I'm the younger brother, so he thinks he doesn't have to listen to me, even though I'm the only one in the family with any common sense."
The dizziness was getting worse, so I put my hands on Ronnie's shoulders to steady myself and to slow him down.
"Please, Mr. Remington, please talk in a straight line, will you?"
That startled him.
He paused, looking at my hands on his shoulders, and when I let go, he started talking again, this time more slowly. Yes, yes, I do prattle on sometimes. I like it when you call me Mr. Remington. I'm going to have to remember to tell Ralph that. We must have people address us that way. About Milam and Bryant, please. Of course you know about the trial. Ralph and I didn't go, of course, but we read all about it in the Commonwealth. They covered it well, don't you think? Something in there, even nice photos about the trial every day. Comprehensive coverage, I'd say. Well, we were horrified to read all the details. Such a tragic, tragic thing. And Ralph read about your grandfather's pickup. That one witness, oh, what was his name? He saw it Sunday morning, out at that other plantation. Well, I'll never remember his name. That worried Ralph right away. He has such a legal mind, you know. He knew people would know whose truck that was. Circumstantial evidence, of course, of course. It proves very little or nothing, he said. But if it were added to what he saw, you know, Roy and J.W. dropping him off so terribly late one night, and Roy borrowing that truck. Well, pardon the expression, but that would be damning, Ralph said. Quite, quite damning. So, of course, we admire your grandfather and his fine work with the citizens' councils and all that, and we've always tried to be very good neighbors. So, of course, when your grandfather came over to chat with us, well, we knew the score. We assured him, as I'm assuring you, that we would never tell anyone anything. Of course, most people don't listen to us anyway, though I have no idea why. I felt the blood draining from my face. The dizziness was back, and the breakfast I'd just eaten felt like rocks in my stomach. My, Hiram, you don't look so well. You know, this Indian summer we're having is quite brutal. The heat over 90, hasn't it been, with all this humidity? Well, it is, of course, the South, but it's just brutal. You should get right back inside, out of this sun, and have yourself a nice cold glass of iced tea. I moved off the sidewalk. And as soon as the way was clear, Ronnie moved past me, still talking as he walked. Iced tea, that will help. Yes, it would, of course, with sugar and a slice of lemon. The sun did feel brutal. The air close, damp and heavy. So thick I could hardly breathe. Had I even been breathing? It felt like Ronnie sucked up all the air when he talked, so fast, so much in what he said. The weight of his words and the weather and everything else from that Mississippi summer squeezed all the air out of me. I half staggered back into the house. Grandpa was reading in the living room when I came in and flopped onto the sofa, but I didn't even look at him. With my head still spinning, I leaned back and stared at the ceiling, waiting for the dizziness to pass. I could feel my grandfather's presence in the room, but he said nothing. He was watching me, waiting. Maybe worried. Would he still worry about me? Or was he worried about himself? My head cleared enough that I could sit up. Grandpa was in his chair and he smiled at me. Are you feeling all right, son? He looked concerned, looked just like my grandfather had always looked. His voice sounded soothing, like I was back home. The sights, sounds, and smells of Grandma's house. Those were all around me. Cozy. It felt good. Then I remembered Ronnie. Had it been a dream? Had I even seen him? Maybe it was all some sort of hallucination. I looked at Grandpa. I loved him. I knew he loved me. We were both sitting in a room where we'd read together, listened to the radio, where he'd played with me when I was a little boy. This room, this house, this man were all a part of my roots, all parts of a memory I had always loved. But another, newer memory nagged my conscience. I tried to ignore it. I wanted to forget it, but the Hilburn stubbornness wouldn't let me. I knew I could settle it with one statement, not even a question. I could say it, watch my grandfather, and know. I'd know immediately, know if my roots were solid as ever or if they'd withered and rotted. I looked at Grandpa, his face full of concern and love for me. I felt his love. I loved him. I had always loved him. Grandpa? Ronnie Remington told me something about a promise.
He didn't move. His expression didn't change. His look of concern stayed the same. But his eyes looked desperate when he shook his head, chuckled, and said,
"Oh, that Ronnie Remington. He talks in such circles that he could drown a man."
You were there. That night, you were there. My grandfather's smile faded. He looked away from me and whispered,
"The boy was alive when I left. They promised they were done with him when they brought me home."
And then I knew. Knew what I didn't want to know.
Chapter 17. On my last Sunday in Greenwood, I slept late, waiting for my grandfather to get up and eat breakfast and find something to do before I came downstairs. By 11 o'clock, I was up and dressed, and without seeing my grandfather, went looking for Naomi. I had to talk to her before I left Mississippi. I needed to talk to someone I cared about and could trust. I made it to our place on the bridge before noon. By then, most people had finished their church meetings, and some, still in their Sunday best, were out for a walk. The heat wave had broken Saturday night, and citizens of Greenwood were in their yards and on the street, savoring the first day of fall-like weather. Naomi wasn't at our spot at the center of the bridge, so I walked across, hoping to see her somewhere along the way. For half an hour I hung around on the north end, watching little kids kick rocks into the yellow-green water of the Yazoo when their mothers weren't looking. Naomi never showed up, so I walked back over the bridge and headed down River Road to her house. When I crossed the highway at the edge of town, the pavement turned to gravel, and I crunched along about a mile past the cotton gin until I came to the Rydells' beat-up shack. It looked deserted. Trees and bushes grew thick in the property behind her house, and long grass and weeds filled the front yard. Most of the paint on the clapboard siding had peeled off long before, and the sagging roof over the porch looked ready to cave in with the next strong wind. The porch steps creaked when I climbed up to the front door. I knocked and waited. Nothing. I knocked again, harder. "Naomi? Hey, Naomi, it's Hiram." Still nothing. I pounded again. "Naomi, are you in there?" Something, a squirrel probably, rustled behind the house, but nothing else moved. I walked through the weeds all the way around the house, hoping to see some sign of her, or maybe to find a note she'd left for me. Nobody was home, and nobody'd been expecting me to stop by. Feeling hurt and empty, I headed back into town, hoping R.C. was right, that Naomi could and would take care of herself. For the rest of that day, my grandfather and I avoided each other. I didn't come home until supper time, and by then he was back in his bedroom.
"Your granddaddy don't feel well, Mr. Hiram,"
Ruth Ann said when I walked into the kitchen for supper,
"and wants you to go on ahead and eat without him."
She set the food on the table.
"That try laid him low, lower than I'd have thought it would. Could be old Mr. Hilburn's finally having a change of heart. If that be the case, and if it's catching, maybe something good might come out of Emmett's death after all. All that grief and suffering that poor boy's mama's been through, Lord, I hope it ain't all in vain."
She looked sad for a moment. Then she remembered what she was doing and motioned for me to sit at the table.
"Don't know how long it'll be before you come back this way, Mr. Hiram, so I've made all your favorite southern foods, and I expect you to eat up every bite. I don't want your mama complaining that you come home looking skinny."
For some reason, I was starving, and I piled my plate with fried chicken, biscuits, mashed potatoes and gravy, string beans, okra. When I got through that, Ruth Ann brought out a slab of ham lacquered with honey glaze, sweet potatoes, warm spiced applesauce, and coleslaw. I ate while Ruth Ann made small talk about her children and their comings and goings. She sure loved her kids. I hope they knew how lucky they were to have a mother like her. When my fork clattered on the empty plate, she told me to go take a walk. Maybe you'll run into that little Rydell girl. And to come back ready for pie, gooseberry, rhubarb, and sweet potato. If you find your friend while you're out making room for dessert, tell her she's surely welcome to sit here and share our pie. We've got plenty. I wandered the streets of Greenwood for about an hour, came back alone, and had some pie. Before I went upstairs to bed, I thanked Ruth Ann for everything she'd done for me. Monday, my last day in Mississippi. At breakfast, Ruth Ann said, "Your granddaddy ate while you were upstairs packing. After that, somebody picked him up and took him down to the courthouse from there to go to look for a car. He's going to be busy, but he promised he'll be back before your train leaves. Feels bad he can't make it to the station, but he wants to say goodbye to you before you go." She looked at me carefully. "Mr. Hiram, are things all right with you and Mr. Hilburn? You both seem awful skittish of each other." What could I say? What could I tell her? "I guess that trial just took a lot out of him," I said without looking up from my plate. "He hasn't been the same since." Ruth Ann waited for me to say more, but I concentrated on the food in front of me. She watched me eat for a moment, and then she turned, shaking her head. After breakfast, I walked to the courthouse to see Sheriff Smith. When I got to his office, his secretary sent me right in. The sheriff looked up from his desk. "Hiram Hilburn, I figured you'd be back in Arizona by now. You ain't planning on staying permanent in Greenwood, are you?"
"No, sir. I'm leaving this afternoon. If it's okay, though, I wanted to ask you a few things before I leave."
He leaned back in his chair and stretched.
"Fire away."
"Well, about Naomi Rydell. I ran into R.C. the other night."
"You know," he interrupted, "I finally did talk to R.C. about his involvement with the trouble up in Money. The boy had an airtight alibi."
"I know."
"Really?
Well, I just wanted to make sure you knew that we took your call seriously. Now, what about his sister?"
"R.C. told me about his dad and everything, and I was wondering, well, what's happened to Mr. Rydell?"
"Not dead, unfortunately. He got busted up bad, but not bad enough. He'll be in the hospital a good while."
"What about Naomi?"
"She told me you might be asking."
The sheriff smiled.
"Nice girl, Naomi Rydell. And it's a miracle she survived that home she's been raised in. I suppose I should have done something sooner, but the law's pretty soft on fathers, especially when there's no mother. Heck, Naomi was mother and father both for that house since she was 8 years old. But you're wondering where she is. Let's just say she's in a safe place. We found her a good home, somewhere her father won't be able to hurt her again, where she can enjoy the last couple of years of her childhood."
"If she knew I'd be looking, did she say anything? Leave me a note or something?" He shook his head.
"Things happened fast after R.C. licked their daddy. Naomi was pretty upset and didn't have time to do much letter writing."
He stood and reached his hand across the desk.
"But I will tell her you came by."
Mr. Paul had a couple of customers when I got to his stand in the courthouse lobby, so I hung back, waiting until they were gone.
"Hey, Mr. Paul," I said when they'd left.
"Hiram Hilburn, I figured you'd be long gone by now. Don't you have to be getting back to school?"
"I'm leaving this afternoon, but I wanted to come over and say goodbye."
"That's thoughtful of you. So were you glad you came to Greenwood?"
"I don't know. Sometimes I am and sometimes I'm not."
"My guess is that sitting through the trial won't be one of your summer highlights."
"I didn't like the trial or any of the stuff that happened before it. But you know what was the worst of all? It was knowing that everybody in that courtroom knew Emmett Till had been murdered. Some probably even had something to do with it. And that jury sat there for a week, listening to evidence and testimony so clear that even my little brothers could have figured it out. And they go and give a not guilty verdict.
At least they had a trial, Mr. Paul said.
But the trial didn't make any difference. These guys got away with murder anyway.
Sure, the boys got off. But you can't tell me the next Peckerwood who's got lynching on his mind isn't going to worry just a little that he might end up in a courtroom.
What about the people who don't get caught? The people who never go to trial? They get away with murder, too.
In a way, they do. But they've also got to live with it the rest of their lives. Can you imagine always worrying about getting caught, about somebody finding out?
Yeah, but it's hard knowing that people can hide so much badness inside themselves. People you think you know and love. It makes you wonder about everybody.
Folks sometimes do ugly things, Hiram, but that don't necessarily make them evil. A lot of good folks just make stupid decisions or get themselves in the wrong place at the wrong time.
But even if he's in the wrong place at the wrong time, a good person shouldn't go along. He should leave or stop whatever bad that's happening.
Sure he should. Sure should all of us. Mr. Paul paused. Have you always managed that?
That gave me something to think about while I walked home. When I got back to my grandfather's house, a new Chevy sedan sat in the driveway.
Got that automatic transmission?
My grandfather said when I came into the living room.
And got a good deal on it.
He motioned for me to sit down.
Where have you been, son?
I kept standing. I didn't feel like talking to him long. Around town, saying goodbye to some people.
What time's your train leave?
2 o'clock. I guess Ruth Ann's going to take me?
In that new Chevy. But she's expecting to feed you lunch before you go. It's her last chance to fatten you up before you leave Mississippi.
He grinned like old times. I stood there a moment without saying anything. Then I said, I guess I better get my bags in the car. Smells like lunch is about ready. When I came back into the house, my grandfather was already at the table.
Mr. Hiram, Ruth Ann said, I do hope you've saved yourself a little appetite. You're going to hurt my feelings if you don't clean up all this food before you go.
Ruth Ann, my grandfather said, I'm sure that between the two of us we can make a good dent in this splendid meal. But whatever we don't eat, you can send with him on the train.
Could, but I've already packed him a little something for the trip.
She pointed to a large grocery bag on the counter.
Don't want to weigh him down with too many things. Y'all get busy eating, she said, as she set a bowl of potato salad on the table. I'll be upstairs, Mr. Hiram, so you just give me a holler when you're ready to go to the station.
When Ruth Ann left, my grandfather said,
Son, I'm sure going to miss having you around the house.
His voice sounded soft and tired.
For a while it seemed like the old days, when you were little and Grandma was still here. You know I still miss her. Miss her terribly.
And it's going to be pretty hard getting used to an empty house again. His eyes got watery.
It was so wonderful having you here. My only wish. I wish there hadn't been so many distractions. It wasn't fair for you to get caught up in that trial business.
Maybe. But it taught me some things. I stared at him, wondering what he'd say. He held my stare a moment and then looked down.
About that, Hiram. You know I tried everything I could to keep you away from that trial. There was no need for you to get involved.
It was the right thing to do, I said. When I left home, I promised Mom I'd do what was right. And at the time, I figured I knew something that might have made a difference in the trial. That's why I told the sheriff, even though I didn't want to. That's why I went to the trial, even though I didn't want to. turns out that what I knew didn't have a thing to do with the kidnapping and murder of Emmett Till. I waited for my grandfather to say something, to apologize. Wouldn't he want to clear his conscience, at least with me, before I left?
Well, he said, trial took a different direction, didn't it? Apparently the prosecution had decided either that Mose Wright's testimony was faulty, or there wasn't sufficient evidence that others had helped Bryant and Milam do anything. And of course the jury wasn't convinced that Bryant and Milam did anything at all to that Till boy. I'm sure there will be rumors floating around for a while. There always are after a sensational trial, but soon enough those will die down and things will get back to normal. What you need to remember, son, Grandpa narrowed his eyes, is that you can't believe everything you hear. Nothing's as simple as you might think.
That was the last either of us talked about the trial. For the rest of lunch, we talked about my brothers and sisters, about life in Tempe, about the weather, his crops, and anything except his guilt. When the time came for me to leave, we said goodbye and hugged. Grandpa got teary-eyed as I carried the rest of my things out the front door to the car. All the way to the station, I tried to convince Ruthann that she didn't have to wait with me. We were standing behind my grandfather's new Chevy, and I had my bags in hand when she finally agreed.
You sure now? I don't want you getting on the wrong train and ending up in New York or someplace worse.
Ruthann, I'm 16. Only one train's passing through here in the next 2 hours. I'm sure I can figure it out. She looked a little sad.
Well, I'm going to miss you around the house. Never did see anything brighten up your granddaddy like having you here did.
She tucked the grocery bag she had packed for me under my arm.
Now you be careful on that train, and don't you dare share this with any strangers.
You take care, Mr. Hiram, and be sure to say my hello to your mama and daddy. Except for the station master who checked my ticket and a couple of railroad workers, the station was empty. And I wished I had a book or magazine to read while I waited for my train. I set my bags on a wooden slat bench on the platform and was ready to walk to a drugstore on Carrollton Avenue to pick something up when I saw her. It didn't look like Naomi at first. She was wearing a bright new cotton dress, and her blonde hair was brushed out down to her shoulders. But maybe the biggest difference was that she didn't look so defeated. She walked right to me, took my hand, and sat down on the bench.
I'm glad I got here before you left, Hiram. I've been wanting to talk to you, but, well, things got complicated pretty fast.
Her hand felt warm, relaxed. She told me Sheriff Smith had found her a family to live with, a good family who'd take care of her. She'd finish high school, and then maybe go to secretarial school or even college. Naomi sounded full of hope. We sat on that bench and talked until my train came. When we hugged goodbye, I felt her tears on my cheek.
I hope you come back someday, Hiram, she whispered. Everything will be better then.
I couldn't answer, because if I did, I knew I'd cry. I just hugged her tighter and prayed nothing but good would come her way for the rest of her life. She'd already had a lifetime share of the bad. The train whistled twice, and a conductor called, "All aboard!" I stood up and grabbed my bags.
"Thanks, Naomi," I said. "Thanks for everything."
I got on the train just before it started moving, and from my window seat I watched Naomi standing alone on the platform until the train was out of sight. Naomi was all right. Was going to be all right. It was nice leaving Greenwood knowing that. When I got back to Arizona, Dad, not Mom, met me at the station in Phoenix. That surprised me. Dad was always busy with something, stuff at work or church or with the little kids, so Mom usually had to deal with me. Then I remembered that he'd probably followed every minute of the trial. Not because I might have been in it, but because it was about somebody like Emmett Till getting killed in Mississippi. Of course he'd follow a civil rights case, especially when it was in Mississippi, and he probably couldn't wait to get my eyewitness account of the whole trial. Fine, if he wanted to know about the trial, I'd tell him almost everything. When I stepped off the train, he was alone, looking over the crowd trying to spot me. He didn't see me at first, and I didn't wave or call to him. I just watched. He looked a little like my grandfather. Not as heavy, but his face, the way his hair was graying, even the way he moved. At least in appearance, he definitely was his father's son. After a minute or so, the crowd thinned enough for him to see me. He smiled, waved, and walked over to me. "Welcome home, son," he said. We shook hands, and then he reached out and put a hand on my shoulder. "We've missed you." Dad and I stood facing each other awkwardly for a moment. I was almost as tall as he was. He looked a little older, tireder. For a second, our eyes met, and something passed between us. An understanding of some sort, from one Mississippi boy to another. Then Dad patted my shoulder and picked up my bags. I followed him out to the parking lot. It's a good 10 miles from the Phoenix train depot to our house in Tempe. Even in late September, the weather was still hot, and Dad had all the car windows down as we headed home. The dry air swirled through the station wagon, moving things around, but not really cooling us off. For the first few minutes, neither one of us said anything. But I wanted to at least try to talk to Dad to see if we could talk without ending up in a fight. "How's everybody?" I asked. "Better, now that school started. The kids were getting pretty antsy the last couple of weeks of summer. Too much time on their hands was not a good thing." Dad cleared his throat, and while keeping his eyes on the road, said, "That trial, it really must have been something. I kept thinking of that poor boy's mother, of his entire family, how awful it must have been for them to see and hear all that evidence, and then to have that jury turn Bryant and Milam loose." He sighed. "It's been like that for too long down there. But maybe all the attention that trial got will put people on warning. Desegregation was already on its way, and then the trial. I can imagine how my dad's taking it. Of course, nothing in the Delta's going to change anytime soon, but it's a start, a step in the right direction." He glanced at me as if he'd just remembered something and said, "Sorry, Hiram. Probably the last thing in the world you want to think about right now is that trial. Tell me about Greenwood. Are you glad you went?"
"Sort of." Greenwood was exactly how I remembered it. The town and the house haven't changed a bit. When I first got there, I thought I'd never want to leave. Then stuff started happening. Ugly kinds of stuff.
"The trial?" asked Dad.
"And other things. Some people there were terrific, but a lot of them, I don't know, they seemed to have a meanness in them. They were friendly and all that, but..."
"They weren't very nice to Negroes."
"Yeah, but it took me a while to notice that. I guess when I was a little kid, that was all going on over my head. At least it never registered with me."
"And what about Grandpa?"
"For a while, it was like the old days when he and Grandma were taking care of me. We went fishing, went out to the fields, ate at the Riverside Cafe. It was a lot of fun." Then I wondered something. "Dad, did you ever do stuff like that with him?"
"All the time. Being the only child, I was pretty spoiled."
"When did it change?"
"Dad never did change. He always wanted to do things with me, but gradually I stopped wanting to do things with him. I guess in a way it was kind of like it was for you. I got older and started noticing some things I hadn't noticed before. When I saw things I didn't like, I wouldn't shut up about them, and Dad didn't like that at all. Anytime I'd want to argue, he'd just tell me, "Children have got to learn to trust their elders," and figured that would shut me up. It did for a while, but when I got old enough to start thinking for myself, I learned that kids can't always trust everything their elders do. And that was the beginning of the end for me and my dad.
"Did you stop loving him?" I asked.
For a long time I thought I did. But then I realized that no matter how wrong or bad or stubborn your father is, he's still your father. I sure didn't like the things he did and said, and frankly, lots of times I didn't like him. But he's my father, and he loved me, and for that I love him. He glanced over at me. "What about you?" I didn't answer right away. Maybe I wouldn't be able to answer for a long time. I knew some things, some horrible things about my grandfather. Dad probably did too. I don't know. Grandpa's pretty complicated. I guess I'm still working on it. Dad reached over and patted my leg. He looked a little embarrassed. I wasn't asking about Grandpa.
We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Mississippi Trial, 1955, by Chris Crow. Read by Victor Bavine. Music by Michael Whalen. Text copyright 2002 by Chris Crow. Production copyright 2008, Penguin Group USA, Inc. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.